There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 63. I'm going to talk some year-to-date stats versus rest of season projections, because that's a potential, you know, buy low, sell high type thing for the second half of the baseball season. Recap some recent news from Wednesday and Thursday. Play our weekly game where somebody's gaining steam in a big way, so I'll probably be playing for golf again. But we'll get to that in a second. I am on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good. We're halfway through the season, man. It's kind of crazy. 81. Most teams are like 81 games right now. So thought it'd be a good time to do some year-to-date versus rest of season projections. See what happens. I'm sure we'll have some pretty good debates about some of these guys. So I'm doing well.
Good. You're doing well. It's going to be fun because, yeah, it is the halfway point. It's time to decide, should we finally – some people finally given up on people that they still have rostered, or – should I go take a chance on these guys that are on the waiver wire? Or like we talked to some injured players last week, a lot of these guys are that were out for a long period of time. Well, they're coming back after the All-Star break, most of them. So like we got a slew of dudes coming back real soon. That'll be interesting. So we'll cover it all like usual and get you going here. But before we get to that, the house cleaning that you guys will be annoyed with in no time, FPAS is coming up in November. So we have to give our weekly plug for First Pitch Arizona. And more importantly, the First Pitch Arizona golf outing, which Ryan has set things up. So I'll give Ryan the floor here as we're ready to rock and roll.
We are. Some progress made this week, Bubba, on the organizational front. So we have booked 70 times at Dobson Ranch in Mesa for November 2nd, around 11 to 12, midday. And we've got 11 people so far. So let's fill that thing up with 28. Got official clearance from the powers that be at First Pitch. This will be an official part of the program, which is kind of cool. So we can, I don't know, maybe we have a sponsor, right? I mean, First Pitch is the sponsor. So maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's the Bubba and the Bloom Open presented by First Pitch Arizona, or just the FPAS Open. I don't know. We got to workshop it, as they say in corporate circles.
High Noons is still available if anybody wants to sponsor. If High Noon wants to sponsor us, it's in the contract. It's open for you at all times.
Could throw some noons on each tees like you did last year at one of the holes in a plastic bag.
Left a little gift for the boys coming up. Celebration.
Struggling a little bit behind this.
Here's some juice, boys. Get going. Some candles to have a good time. So, yeah, come join us. It is fun. It doesn't matter what skill level you are. It is all about having fun. We're just going to slap it around the golf course. And then we go to the meet and greet Thursday night at Mesa, usually right next to the hotel, and then enjoy the weekend from there. It's going to be absolutely awesome. I heard Ryan mention, I hadn't looked at the agenda or the schedule for the fall league yet, but it looks like the Fall Stars game is once again next door to the hotel in Mesa, which means the Home Run Derby, which I don't know, right? We had a lot of highlights last year. Like I think I'll speak for myself here. Biggest highlight was doing the live show on Friday night. That's pretty freaking awesome. But I think it was just one of the most cool things was just sitting there at the Derby. That was a nice evening. Like weather was nice. That was me, you, Rob Silver, James Anderson. And then behind us was a handful of guys. we were right behind home plate watching Matt Mervis and Edward Julian and all these dudes just drop. O'Neill Cruz wasn't in the Derby. He was walking around monster.
Eston Kerstad.
Yeah,
Kerstad. He was in the Derby.
It was just a cool thing to see. It was the first year, I believe, they did the Derby at FPAS, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's a great weekend. I know you're going to get annoyed with us by plugging this over and over again, but come check it out. Hit any of us up. Hit anybody from HQ up if you have questions on it. They will point you in the right direction. But biggest thing, if you like to golf, if you think you like to golf, you just want to come have fun with people talking fantasy baseball for 4 hours playing golf, let us know. We'll take care of that for you.
I think since our last show, first pitch registration is actually opened.
It is.
So that's another big thing too. So you can actually go and register. The early bird rate runs out July 5th. So if you go to baseballhq.com on the right side of the site, there's a logo for first pitch and you can check it out there. So
from our Slack, the hotel blocks will be opened up here in the next week or two, I believe. They're almost finalizing that. So if you don't see that, it's not there for a reason. That'll be coming shortly.
Yep.
All right. Let's have some fun here. Let's talk some recent news and notes on the diamond. Corbin Carroll left Thursday's game with a shoulder injury. Like, I was working, so I saw the headline, and then I saw what took place. It was when he was swinging. He swung and missed, and I hate seeing those. Those are, like, the worst to me. I have Fernando Tatis flashbacks. Tatis had a much worse reaction than Corbin Carroll did, but reaction obviously doesn't mean everything for how this plays out. The Diamondbacks are saying it's not too serious. Of course, that's what they're going to say right now. Let's be real about that. They're going to have to do some MRI and some other imaging and whatnot. He might be out for the weekend. Hopefully that's it. But what's your thoughts on this injury? We're still, like, so new into what is actually taking place.
Yeah. I mean, can't take much away from now. Really nothing you can really do about it. It would obviously suck. I mean, Corbin Carroll is a first round pick next year, I think, at this rate. Like, yeah, I think he's a top five. I mean, 17 homers, 24 steals, hitting .292. It's probably a top 10 pick next year, given his age and pedigree and that sort of thing. So you just hope for the best. I do wonder, like, since we are getting close to the All-Star break, it's one full week left after this weekend.
True.
Like, if there's any doubt at all, I could see the Diamondbacks shutting down Corbin Carroll, who was just named to the All-Star team on Thursday, and he's from just south of Seattle, so that'll actually be pretty cool, assuming he can play. So, yeah, hope for the best. In terms of, like, potential replacements, like Pavin Smith sitting there on the roster, on the bench, should probably stay on your fantasy bench. He's terrible. And, again, probably no replacing Corbin Carroll, but let's just wait and see and hopefully take the Diamondbacks at their word. You can be misled often by doing that, though.
Yes, you can. So let's see what happens. And I wouldn't be shocked, like you said, give him a week off before the All-Star break and see where it goes. Because they're already saying with, like, Yuri Perez, he'll probably make his next start, maybe two. But then the last start before the break, they're going to give it to him off to kind of give him that extra rest to limit innings. Michael Kopech, he's walked 16 batters his last three starts. The White Sox are thinking about giving him a start off this week just because A, innings, and just like, go clear your head, kid. So you're going to start seeing, that's my point. It's going to be one of the things that you're going to see more often is some pitchers, you know, with all the injuries we've had, we've got a lot of young arms out there that have not thrown a ton of innings in their career. So it's going to get interesting to see how teams manage things because you can't just send them down because there aren't a lot of options left with all the injuries that have been taking place.
Yep.
But some teams do have options, and that is the Cleveland Guardians, as Cal Quantrill will be making his start, I believe, on Friday for the Cleveland Guardians off the IL. Logan Allen got sent back to AAA. The writing was on the walls the way I said it. I talked about it on other shows I've done, like First Pitch podcast and all that stuff. As a Logan Allen manager, I've seen this firsthand. He's getting strikeouts more often than not, but his control is out of whack, and he's not going deep in the games. He barely goes five innings right now. That wasn't going to be sustainable for a team that's trying to make a playoff run. So he has to go figure out his control and his efficiency in the minor leagues. And this also allows them to kind of manage his innings at the same time. So Quantrill will be there for now. We know he's not great. I expect Logan Allen to come back and maybe be better than he was before. We'll see. But what's your thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, that's the question is, like, yeah, what do you do with Logan Allen, who I have in like 15 team mix labor? I'm waiting this out at least through the All-Star break, probably through July.
Yep.
To see how Cleveland handles this. Cause I do think long-term, like, Cal Quantrill is not right, for this rotation. And you are true. I think even like the last show or maybe two shows ago, we were kind of speculating that, you know, whether it be Gavin Williams, which in hindsight, after Gavin Williams shoved in the second start, like that guy is staying pretty in the
good
rotation.
Pretty good.
Savali, I don't know. Savali just kind of gets a hall pass for a while. But, you know, I won't besmirch that because Savali is a Bloom Boards legend, so we'll keep him in there. I do think eventually Quantrill kind of goes out or an injury happens and that sort of thing. So I think Logan Allen, if you have Logan Allen, even in like 12-team leagues, I think you try and hold as long as you can, again, at least through the All-Star break at minimum, and see what Cleveland decides to do. I just think that the talent's absolutely there. Things kind of went by the wayside, like you said, Bubba. The last three starts for Logan Allen, 3 innings, 4 innings, 3 2/3. Not great. So the writing was kind of on the wall.
Yep, it was. But like you said, Quantrill, he's not as good as these guys. Savali could be a long man out of the pen if worse came to worse. Like there's options to make it work. And maybe they decide, you know, Bibee or Williams, they want to give a breather here and there to manage their innings. Like there's a lot of avenues for Cleveland to do their thing. So I'm with you. I'm trying to hang on to Logan Allen as long as possible. That's my plan there. The Milwaukee Brewers, Bryce Turan got recalled from AAA. Luis Urias, I should say, as I've been told I was wrong before. Luis Urias was recalled or sent down to AAA. Turan was hitting close to 300 with 3 homers and 2 stolen bases in his 15 games since being demoted. So he looked better, of course. But we saw this dog and pony show for a couple months, so I'm not overly excited just yet. What about you?
No, I mean, Bryce Turan was a kind of a first 2 weeks, thank you for your service all-star, which I'm going to kind of coin that term. I like that, where someone just gets hot and then doesn't, and then you drop them. Bryce Turan was that guy early on, looked great early, back down. The issue I have with Turan, like going forward, is I just see this being a platoon. I mean, I don't see Turan playing much at all against left-handed pitching. And if you look at Milwaukee's schedule coming up, they get a good amount of lefty. So they get Rich Hill on Sunday. They get Drew Smyly Monday, Justin Steele Wednesday, Andrew Abbott next Friday. So like if you're in a weekly league, you probably can't start Bryce Turan next week anyway. And so it's more just like a daily kind of matchup thing if you're in that type of league where I'd go after Turan, but I'm not really all that excited. And I'm a little disappointed. So we talked about one of the listener questions we got last week was like picking up, stashing injured guys before they come back. Well, I had the bright idea of doing that with Luis Urias. Stashed him for like 2 weeks and then he just crapped the bed and now he's a cut. So sometimes it works. Oftentimes on my teams, it does not.
On your teams, it does not. Yeah, it's a roller coaster. There's no doubt about it. Like, hey, I'll never forget. I was so proud of myself for Trevor Rogers. Did you see the news on that finally came out?
No, what's up with his arm? His other arm?
I'll look it up while we talk about this. But this is news that how it did not come out before is just so beyond mind-blowing to me. I even tweeted out at one point this past week, like, hey, Marlins. I think I even added them, maybe. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing here? Because
Did they respond to you?
No, of course they did not, because this was a serious question. But it was just, real talk. What actually happened with Trevor Rogers' non-throwing shoulder? That was my comment. But where is the update I saw? It was he shut down through the All-Star break, but it was something severe. I need to find the actual thing here. But he's going to be out for a while, it sounds like. He messed it up pretty good.
Your stash, and then
yeah, I got him for like a buck everywhere. That did not pan out well. I'll find the real news soon. But we'll move to the Detroit Tigers. Reese Olson left Thursday's game. He had X-rays on his knee. They came back negative. I mentioned this because Joey Wentz got sent back to AAA to open up a spot for Tariq Skubal, who is due back next week because he finished his final rehab start. But Alex Fado is out there. They have an E-Rod's out there. There's gonna be a lot of spots here. So the Reese Olson thing was fun, but it might not be lasting too much longer.
Yeah, it might not. Although, like, I mean, that level of who knows what Skubal will. He's looked great in rehabs, but who knows how he looks when he first comes back. I will say it's a two-step week for Tariq Skubal with the first game at least going against Oakland. So if you already have Skubal on the cheap, that you know, who knows how it'll pan out. But you kind of played that one well. I forget where who his second start is against versus Toronto. next Sunday, so that's not as great for Scoobal. Erod's back. The Fado finger has been healed. The fingernail, the middle finger has been healed. So, yeah, I don't know if there is a spot for Reese Olsen. We'll see. He's been okay. Just a lot of arms in Detroit, which is good for them. It's good to have that quantity. But we'll see. See how that shakes out.
All right, Trevor Rogers. Rogers has a partial tear in his right non-throwing lat. They'll have better clarity of his timeline after the All-Star break. Just for his timeline after the All-Star break. Like, how is this news nowhere to be found? Like, how a tear in your lat, no one says a word about that. Just, that's infuriating to me.
That sucks. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's real weird. That's up there with the Yu Darvish sickness news you've been talking about too.
I've been talking about that. And then even today it gets better. Like, he doesn't go to Pittsburgh because he's sick. When he flies to Pittsburgh because he's sick, but he still can't play. He's supposed to start on Friday. Now he got pushed back because he's still sick, hoping to pitch this weekend, but he's traveling with the team. But no clue what the heck's going on there with Yu Darvish. It is mind-boggling to me what is happening there. All right, another situation here. Brendan Faught made his return to the bigs, and you thought he never would have left. It was the same show, same story. We're all pulling for Brendan Faught, I think, for the most part, but it's gotten to the point. I don't know. Whatever he's doing in AAA, it ain't translating to the bigs anytime soon, it looks like.
It's not. I mean, it was a tough spot, like day game against the Rays, which is kind of tough. The next start for Faught is against Mr. Scherzer and the Mets, so a little bit easier against the reeling Metropolitans. It'll be interesting to see how much Faught is started. It was kind of a shrewd pickup because Faught was back down in AAA and pitched pretty well there, but we are getting into that routine of, I mean, this is like the quad A kind of thing. Not to say this is Faught's long-term spot where he ends up, but until he shows something in the majors, like, it's I don't know. It's tough to start him.
Yeah, I'm I don't have any shares, so I'm avoiding that storm right now, and I'm hoping I'm wrong someday. I'll say that much, I'll be honest, but it ain't pretty anytime soon. Let's talk weekend matchups, Bloom. I'll give you the floor. I'm not even gonna preface anything here. I'm gonna let you have this moment to shine. All I'm gonna say is, ever since Ryan started tweeting out weekly updates on the Bubba Bloom Pod Twitter, things are going his way. That's the best. And this last week, by the way, if for some reason you do follow our streamers, they both played pretty darn well for you. It just happened his was slightly better.
Yes. And so I did start tweeting out the scoreboards when it was 11-8, Bubba. So, you know, I started putting it out there when I was losing. But things have turned around in a big way for me. Took you down with Dean Kramer over Osvaldo Baido.
Yeah.
Is it Beto?
I don't know. I call it Beto. It could be either or.
Go Beto. By one out. Osvaldo could not get that last out. So I took you down 9-8 2/3. On the hitting side, what I thought you had a great pick when the Leonard Diaz only got 3 points.
He didn't play Sunday.
Didn't play Sunday. I mean, that's, I don't know, the life of a catcher / utility.
Yeah, that thing. Pissed me off when I saw that. I was like, oh, man.
So. Tommy Pham had two hits.
We were tied going into Sunday.
Yep. Tommy Pham had two hits, I think, on Sunday and took it down before Tommy Pham became
the legend,
a fantasy baseball legend on Twitter for just going off on a kind of randomly, like honestly, kind of randomly. And the dude,
that's almost like he had a bad batting practice session and decided I'm going to take it out on Twitter or something. It was a Kevin Durant moment for Tommy Pham.
Between like, all of these are not created equal, but between that incident this week with Tommy Pham, the Jock Peterson, whatever, he was stabbed at a nightclub. Yes. You remember this like 2 or 3 years ago?
Okay. I don't know why I remember this. This is good stuff because you know me well enough. Most people do. I'm a very sarcastic person. So Yancey Eaton, of all people, good buddy Yancey. He's been kind of, he's off the Twitter radar, but he's doing his thing. So he sends me this picture that day. And he says, I was looking for an old fan tweet and found this. I tweeted this on February 28th, 2021. He got, quote unquote, because this is from the article, he got stabbed doing something he loved, talking about Tommy Pham. Because actually, Yancey said that. I quoted Yancey from Potapalooza. He got stabbed doing something he loves. So, yes, Tommy Pham, good times.
That's hilarious. I kind of forgot about that until I started doing that. on the field, Tommy Pham. So I wrote it for HQ this week. I wrote a all second half, like all-star team kind of a thing. And Tommy Pham was the cover boy. That dude is knocking the hell out of the ball and running. 9 for 10 steals, 8 homers, great barrel rate, great strikeout rate. Like from a baseball standpoint, playing every day, I think the guy, as long as he can stay healthy, is in for a pretty huge second half. So I didn't look this week, but I would not think Tommy Pham is eligible in our streamer game, which again is 50% rostered or less. I think he has rightfully ascended from qualification. So what is he?
65%.
Okay.
Which that is almost his hard hit rate since June 7th, by the way.
There you go. I mean, that should be like 90% Tommy Pham owned in.
I'll give Curlin credit on this one because he got me on Tommy Pham in early June because he was digging in for some deep guys like after Pham's first good week he started having. But so I have shares already. But since June 7th, a near 18% like barrel rate, 63% hard hit rate or something, the dude is mashing. And now he's a legend in the fantasy game. So bravo to Tommy Pham and keep up the good work there, buddy. So all right, it's 11-10 Bloomfield as we head to the diamond this week. I thought we were gonna have a rematch of pitchers, honestly. I thought we were, but he went somewhere else. So why don't you let us know who your pitcher is this week?
So I was actually torn between two guys. You took neither one. So I had the second pick in pitching. I took David Peterson, went back and forth between Peterson and Paul Blackburn, who was kind of a two-step darling this week. I think it was like 30%. Rostered in 12 teamers, got the win over the Yankees early in the week. I don't know who does he play this week.
32%
Sunday. He goes against the White Sox, against the aforementioned Mr. Kopech. So thought about Blackburn. Maybe should have gone there, but went David Peterson, who pitched well in his return. For David Peterson, really, it's all about the control of the walks and can he pitch deep enough in the games. Strikeouts have always been there for Peterson, and in our scoring system, which is innings plus K's minus earned runs. I like that. I was surprised by your pick, Bubba, because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So you lost last week by picking Osvaldo, Beto. And so what are we doing this week?
We're going right back to him. And I love the Blackburn pick. I picked him up everywhere on NFBC this past week. I was narrowed down between Osvaldo Beto and Dean Kramer. That's why I thought you were going back to Kramer. We could have a matchup all over again on this one. I went with Beto for a lot of the reasons I took him last week. He's getting you 5 or more Ks. He's getting you 5 innings and back-to-back starts. He's basically a quality start type pitcher with strikeouts. And now he faces the Milwaukee Brewers, a team that's striking out over 28% of the time versus righties over the last 3 weeks, hitting barely over 200 versus righties. With like an ISO close to 100. Like they are struggling tremendously. And we'll talk about a lot of Brewers coming up. So it'll make sense that they're struggling tremendously. So I'm going to take my chances there with Osvaldo and go back to the horse because this is me supporting him going, hey, you did not lose last week. Someone was just slightly better. That's what it was, my friend. He got a participation trophy, which I think are the worst things in sports. But yeah, I'm going to go back to Beto. I love the Blackburn hat tip you gave there. These are all good picks this week. So Peterson, out of all the ones, Peterson probably would have been my fourth. So that means he's going to deal. That's just the bottom. I think I missed it. Who's Peterson play this week?
White Sox. Or no, sorry. That was Blackburn. He goes against your San Francisco Giants.
Oh, you're done. You're done. A lefty, Austin Slater, double dong coming up. No, I'm just kidding. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. Yeah, I'm going to go Osvaldo, Beto, and hope for just do the same thing. And I know he'll beat David Peterson, so we're good there.
Peterson's going against Alex Wood, who I benched and cut everywhere this week because he's been terrible and then had 7 strikeouts against in a tough matchup. I forget who. Against the Blue Jays, yeah. So that's
Alex Wood does, though, because now he'll throw 30 pitches his next outing and give up 7 runs. So just don't worry about it. It's just one of those long-term – the 3 good starts will get outweighed by the 12 bad ones. Just walk away from it. It'll be just
that would
fine.
Make me feel better.
Yeah, because look at his game log. He barely goes long enough to even qualify for wins most of the time. All right, who's your hitter this week?
We both went to the same exact well. So,
I would have taken your guy, by the way.
Yeah, all right. So I went Andy Ibañez. I mean, the matchup for Detroit this week, really all week, for Andy Ibanez. I talked about Ibanez a lot. I was on Sleeper in the Bus with Justin Mason this past week previewing Fab, and Ibanez was like my favorite and one of your favorites, I know for sure. Streamer picks this week just because of the schedule, but they go to Colorado, and not only is it at Colorado, it's who's Colorado throwing? It's Gomber, right, Siebold, here, and Freeland.
Yep, tee it up, boys. Tee it up.
So, like, yeah. Andy Ibanez. I really like the skills. It's not just the matchup. Andy Ibanez is kind of like a career journeyman. Actually had a really good spurt 2 years ago with Texas. And I don't really know what he did last year. But he's back. He's playing. And he's hitting. And he's eligible second, third, and outfield. So, very useful, even in 12-teamers. So, I like that. And you went with Matt Vierling. So,
yeah, real quick on the Ibanez thing, what you were mentioning, what I like about him is not just a streamer thing for him. Like, all the Tigers were great streams, Vierling, Carpenter, all these guys. But Ibanez, the flexibility he gives your team positional-wise, and just like you said, how he's hitting right now, you get his quality of contact metrics. Like, he's just crushing the baseball, and he's hitting third. And the Tigers have been peskier than hell. Like, they're walking a lot and not striking out a ton. So there's run-producing opportunities for a guy hitting third out of all teams, the Tigers right now. So, yeah, there is – there's liability pass this week.
And your boy, speaking of the Tigers, we kind of went back and forth a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago. Torque.
Double dong today, by the way.
Two homers today.
Three home runs on the week. It's the Tigers week. The Tigers
making me look bad. I think he's like still hitting like 200 this month. Oh, dude. But
I wrote him up. Power, so. Yeah, I wrote him up as a faller in a recent Fantasy Pros column. This is what he does. He's me and the guilds were talking about him on Twitter the other day. Torkelson is the most tilting player out there because he'll have weeks like this and have like 3 weeks where he does nothing, hits 100 and strikes out 45%, and then he'll come back and he'll do this again. So you either just have to like weigh it out or just cross your fingers you pick the right matchups with Torque.
This week he's hitting like 200, three homers. Last week he went 2 for 25. Week before, three homers, 9 for 29. Fantastic. The week before that, 3 for 22 with nothing. So wow.
Yeah,
that's tough.
It's a tough one to roster. I'll just throw this out there and we'll get back to our game, but it's just as hard to roster Torkelson as it is Jake Berger right now. Just gonna throw that out there for all of us that love Berger for so long. If you guys get bored, take about 30 seconds to look at his player page right now. It ain't pretty. Like, with Moncada coming back, that playing time might slowly start disappearing
for Jake. Is it thank you for your service territory?
Yeah, last week he had two hits. One was a double, one was a homer, and he struck out 46% of the time. There's a tremendous amount of swing and miss with Berger right now.
And that's what's like, I know we're kind of going way off, but whatever. For me, that's one of my like weaknesses in fantasy is keeping up with like weekly production with a lot of these guys. We're like, I don't hear about Jake Berger for a week. And it's like, well, I just assume he's doing fine because I really like him. And I analyzed him like a week ago and everything looked great. So he's in my lineup for this week and the following week and the next week. And so that's something I know I at least need to be a lot more on top of.
How do you have a life, Ryan? It's okay. We can't all be glued to everything. But yeah, Berger's a guy that I'm kind of getting worried for. But back to my pick this week, you mentioned I have Matt Vierling for those awesome Rockies matchups that he has there in Coors. The only thing I'll say is they ended up playing on Thursday night. They had a hailstorm go through there, and it's supposed to be nasty weather, chances of rain all weekend. So I think they'll still play. We'll see. But you got Vierling, who's been leading off the last couple of days. He's getting multiple hits time and time again, playing in the outfield. They move him around. He plays multiple positions in the outfield every game. They just keep flexing him around. So when guys come in to give defensive relief or whatever, he stays in the game. He's got 7 homers on the year. And I just love his recent production the most. I mentioned just in general how the Tigers, like, they're beating up good pitchers of late, too. That's the funny part. That's the DFS guy. I mean, you get to witness this. It's fun, but just over like the last 2 weeks, Vierling's hitting .385 with 2 doubles, 3 homers, 9 runs scored, over a 13% walk rate, which will help score runs. So, yeah, I'm liking some Matt Vierling. You have a great pick in Ibanez. It'll be really – like, this is going to be one of those that could definitely come – it might come down to, does Vierling score enough runs for the extra base hits that Ibanez gets? That might be the difference this weekend. So, it'll be a fun one.
Looking forward to the sheer ratings boost that the Detroit-Colorado series gets from the Bubba and the Bloom faithful watching how these streams
go. Might have to go like find a free trial of MLB TV and watch the games this weekend. We'll see.
We'll see that anyway.
Yeah, I need to. You're right. Fair enough. But all right, let's talk Bloom boards. We got a fun one this week, Mr. Bloomfield. How about you give us a little tip on what we're going to talk about? Because this is what we love, people. We have interaction from you guys, and that will help these Bloom boards flourish even more.
Yeah, a lot of great comments on this one. So the thought is, since we are halfway through the season, like literally halfway, I think a lot of teams are playing their 81st game or just played it, figured I'd take the year-to-date production for hitters, compare that to the rest of season projection. And so what I did for that is on Fangraphs, and these are publicly free available projections, I took an average of Steamer and the bat by Derek Hardy, both, you know, great projection systems. This is not to the purpose of this is to not degrade projection systems or anything like that. But I just thought it'd be interesting since projection systems rest of season and since playing time should more or less be equal since we're at exactly halfway through the season, it'd be an interesting time to compare which guys the projections think, and I did this, I just ranked it by OPS. The board itself is displaying average and home runs. It's just a little bit more readable. Which hitters are projected to gain the most in OPS, which is on base plus slugging, and then which are projected to fall the furthest. And so I did the top 10 gainers, the bottom 10 as well. And it's kind of like, I mean, the projections always are typically going to go more to a hitter's like baseline, what they've done a little bit this year, but a lot to like what they've done in previous seasons, go back to their baseline. And so I think the interesting kind of angle with this week, Bubba, is like, which guys do we think are just going to stay on heaters and buck the trend, or which ones the projections are going to be right about and they kind of fall back to who they are. So.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this. This is kind of like the buy low, sell high kind of conversation on things. Are you a believer type situation? So there's a name that stands out. Well, there's a bunch of names that stand out to me. Don't get me wrong. But there's one towards the top I want to talk about immediately because we basically hung up a jersey in the Astros dugout for Jose Abreu a while ago. And basically said he's done. Curtains. Nothing to see here. He's hitting 235 on the year, 6 homers now. But what I want to mention, and this is – I actually play him in DFS almost every day now because they haven't raised his price. But in the month of June, not counting his two-run double on Thursday night, so heading into Thursday, Abreu's hitting 292 with 5 home runs and 19 RBIs in the month of June, which is much more Abreu-esque. He's barreling the ball over 10%, almost a 54% hard hit rate. Still striking out a ton. That's kind of the hiccup there. But I'm at least paying attention to what we're seeing here. Maybe Big John Studd should get a little like congrats for holding out hope for so long. But are you buying into
Big this John podcast? Studd, by the way, is John Legaza.
Oh,
I figure people don't know. Sorry, I mean, he is sorry. I know this is one of your guests' glossary words, friend of the podcast, but yeah. Big John L did our underdog draft with the Super Bowl night. But John Legaza, he's a smart dude.
He's the man. So, he's been pounding this drum. I give him a lot of hard time for it. But like I said, I can't ignore the production in June. It's pretty darn good. So are you a believer in this turning back to the second half? Because rest of season projections, 263 with 9 home runs, in reality, that could be low if he keeps this up. So what are your thoughts on Jose Abreu?
I'm disappointed in myself, to be honest. Like I was one of the, and I am, my MO is to not always and blindly trust the projection. And we've had this conversation a few times in recent episodes, but I much more sway to, especially on the hitter side, these guys are going to regress either positively or negatively back to who they are much more often than not. And in Jose Abreu's case, I held ground. He had hit 0 home runs for almost like 8 calendar months. And I finally said, all right, something's wrong here. He's 36. He's falling off a cliff. And then June friggin' happened. So like, I don't know. It's just one example, but like, I just think with a lot of these guys, and I'll probably repeat this with a few of the names on here that are projected to rebound in the second half, I think you just need to trust the track record with these guys and go for it. And so the Jose Abreu projection of 263 with nine homers in Houston, like if they get Yordan back, like that's pretty damn sweet for someone who was dropped in a lot of 12 team leagues and even in 15 teamers as well.
And that's what I want to clarify first, though, is if you dropped him, especially in 12s, you weren't wrong at that point in time. Those are the guys you dropped.
Agreed. Yes, agreed. Because like, yeah, so the replacement level there is just so tough, and there's only so long you can only roster someone like that, have them in your lineup in a 12 teamer for so long before you're just like, yeah, you have to make a move. And a lot of times it works out. You drop and, you know, maybe you picks up, you know, it, I don't know. There's a saying, if you don't regret your drops, you're not being aggressive enough. Kind of believe that.
Yeah, I do believe it to an extent. You need to, if you're not making mistakes, you're not playing hard enough type philosophy. So these will happen. These will happen many times. Yep. If for some reason he's still available, go run, figure it out. But I think he's been scooped up by now at that month of June. And I am a believer in what we're seeing from Mr. Jose Abreu. Willie Adames, let's talk Milwaukee Brewers. We'll have a few here to discuss. And a lot of listener questions came from this. We'll highlight the listener questions later because there's a lot involving the Milwaukee Brewers. But Willie Adames hitting 201 with 12 homers. He went 0-for-5 with two more Ks on Thursday. So it didn't get any better on the season. He's now hitting .198. It's brutal. But the rest of season projections have 246, 16 homers. That's kind of what you want to see from Willie Adames. You know, the quality of contact, the barrels are still great. The hard hit, not so much, which is a bit surprising. So what are you seeing with Adames? That is there room for the hope to trust the rest of season projections? Or is there potentially you're thinking something's broken here?
I think this is the same guy we saw last year, to be honest. And so from a skills perspective, I think this is the same guy that we saw last year. Now, I think Willie Adames, personally, in my opinion, was playing a little bit over his head last season. So I don't think we could have expected what he hit last year, 38 home runs, like that, or 31, sorry, 31. With 98 RBI. I don't think we could have expected that, but you mentioned, Bubba, the barrels, it's exactly the same barrel rate as last year, pretty much exactly the same strikeout rate as last year, pretty much exactly the same ground ball, line drive, fly ball from Willie Adames. The BABIP has totally cratered. That's why he's hitting 201. I think this rebounds, and I think the projection of 246, 16 home runs, that seems like a lot in a half season, but I think Willie Adames could hit 240 with like 10 to 12, maybe 15 homers again. So I think Willie Adames is a fantastic buy low. And I know it's someone who you were pretty high on entering the season. Because he was a Willie.
Not just because he was a Willie. It was either Willie Adames or Jeremy Pena. A lot of the drafts is shortstop for me. I got what you're saying. I got you. It's been a rough go there. I've said it on this show many times that you look at teams that are playing well, kind of, I hate to do this, go back to our Tigers conversation, like, when teams, they kind of all start hitting together, there's a theme to this. And before the season started, I was all about the Brewers value. I talked about it. Like, Yelich was like the highest drafted guy, him and Adames. You had Rowdy late. You had a bunch of outfielders you could take on late. William Contreras, I love, who's actually playing okay. Like, he's not playing bad. He's one of the few bright spots, him and Yelich in that Brewers lineup. But let's talk Rowdy Tellez. He's next up here, you know, 215, 12 home runs on the season. And I've dug in on him a few times this year because it's a popular question on shows. Honestly,
there's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I keep saying it. The dude, everything screams like a massive, you know, run coming up for Rowdy Tellez. But if I'm wrong, please enlighten me, Bloomfield. So what are you seeing on Rowdy Tellez?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say what I just said about Jose Abreu and not apply it pretty much to Rowdy Tellez. I mean, Jose Abreu has a longer track record than Tellez, but Tellez is in his prime. He's 28. So, like, I look at a guy who each of the last two seasons has had elite power, elite hard hit. I don't think that just falls off and disappears. So I think from a skills perspective, Rowdy Tellez will be fine. What I'm a little bit worried about, and this came up in one of the listener questions, comments, whatever, one of the threads that when we were promoting this, how much leash does he get in Milwaukee? And like, how much does he start not playing against left-handed pitching? And like, the thing with Jose Abreu is like Dusty Baker, and you know, he's a dusty guy. And so Jose Abreu was going to play pretty much all season. I don't know if we can say that with Rowdy Tellez. So I do think Rowdy Tellez, if given the chance, will turn this around and be who we thought he'd be in, you know, before draft season. I'm starting to wonder if he gets the chance to do that.
That's my concern. Like, even when I wrote about him a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, a platoon situation could severely happen, and I wouldn't be surprised. I guess if I had to see anything in his profile that I'd like to see change, he's being much more selective. Like, he's not swinging as much as he has in his career. That'd be the biggest thing, I would say. Like, it's dropped off to 38% swing rate this year, in the zone and out of the zone, both. So that would be my – and he's taking more called strikes. So I think aggressiveness would obviously help Rowdy Tellez out some more. Other than that, like we both said, he's pretty much the same dude. So that rest of season projection at 246 and 16, basically the same rest of season projection as Willy Adames. I could see. I really could.
So I'm interested to see like what Milwaukee does, because they don't really have like an in-house option. I mean, like Owen Miller, who has
Luke Voigt,
thank you for your service, has not. I mean, he's been terrible. Owen Miller did play at first base the one game against the lefty that Rowdy Tellez sat. So does Milwaukee try and make a move and go on the trade market for a Rowdy replacement? That's the only thing. It's not like they have a stud sitting there, I think, just kind of waiting. So.
Yeah, like the biggest concern I had was once Miller kind of did Miller things, was Luis Urias coming in there and doing it, and now that's gone. So that's out of the question
either. Yeah.
So yeah, the options for the platoon situation aren't really there, as you're saying. So that is a plus, I guess, in the right department. So I guess we'll see how that one plays out. We've talked Manny Machado before on similar boards like this. Let's talk about Taylor Ward. This is a fun one with Taylor Ward hitting 249. With 9 home runs on the season, horrific start to the season, well-documented horrific start to the season. But then he went on quite a little heater there for a few weeks where we're like, okay, he's back. Game time, Taylor Ward, let's go. And then he's kind of quieted down again, and he's back to platooning with Mickey Moniak quite a bit, which is fine for me for certain reasons. But it looked like Taylor Ward was going to prevent that from happening. Rest of season projections have him hitting 262 with 10 home runs. Few stolen bases. What's your take on Taylor Ward? Because it has been quite a roller coaster ride. I think some of us were kind of writing him off at one point, and then the hot streak kind of got us back on board, but now he's back to kind of the cold guy again.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's kind of bad when you show up as a top 10 gainer, yet your rest of season projection is 262 with 10 homers. Like,
yeah, that's nothing.
That's
crazy,
pretty bad. So, like, even if Taylor Ward hits the projection, which is saying he's going to rebound technically from where he started or where he's been or where he is right now, I should say. You end up with a guy who's hitting 250 with 19 home runs. And what does he have? 3 steals this season. So, like, I just, yes, Taylor Ward's like obviously rosterable in 15s. You start him in 15s and 12s. Like, I don't, he's not really that special. And then, like you said, Bubba, I don't know how long this Mickey Maniac streak continues to go, but like, there's definite platoon vibes here going forward as well. So I'm not really on the Taylor Ward train. I could be wrong. He could go on an absolute heater like we've seen in the past. Like you mentioned, he's been so streaky, but I mean, to project a rebound at 262, 10 homers over half the season is not that great.
Yeah. And you said what I was going to say is, he did this last year. He came out the door like a gangbuster, then slumped tremendously, and then his last month of the year was awesome. So he's got this in him. We've seen this with Taylor Ward. But similar like the Abreu comment early on, it's tough to roster him in 12s right now just because he's not playing enough and the production is bad. And like if you in 12s, it's all about streaming. You could have dropped Ward and streamed Carey Carpenter or Matt Vierling or someone this week, and the next week going, you know, 2 weeks ago is Will Benson, because all his games in Cincinnati, and those guys are producing just as good, if not better than Taylor Ward on a week-to-week basis if you play the streaming game. So in 12s, it's very difficult to hang on to Ward, even though I think we could all agree we wouldn't be shocked if we see another 2 to 3 week hot streak somewhere down the road here, and just hopefully, you know, you find a way to pick him back up again type scenario.
Yep.
Anybody else on the top 10 that you'd like to discuss before we talk about the flip side of the situation?
Not really. I mean, there's some studs here like Vlad Jr., J-Rod, not worried about. You talked about Machado. Number one, I mean, we should talk about the number one.
You want to talk about Baez?
Javi Baez. Like, it's so frustrating. Yeah. I think like it's so streaky that with Javi Baez's plate approach, like it's just, and it's been this way for quite some time, and we've seen next to nothing from Baez pretty much his whole tenure in Detroit. So like, it's more of a gut call, but I'm taking the under on Javi Baez, who is projected to be a 256 hitter with 11 homers the rest of the way. I, as bad as that sounds, I don't even know if he can reach that.
What's crazy to me with Baez, I think we probably talked about him at some point this season, is his strikeout rate. It's like the lowest of his career.
Yeah,
the lowest of his career, and he still has like one of the worst BABIPs of his career. And he's hitting 224 with next to no power. At least he's stealing some bags. But yeah, it's a great point with Baez. It's almost like, hey, go be more aggressive, please. Even though if you look at his swinging rates, they're the same pretty much. So he's just not striking out.
Yeah, and the power is like just completely gone away. I mean, his Baez barrel rate the last 3 seasons, 13%, 8%. 3.5 right now. It's just, yeah, it's rough.
Not good. I'm glad I enjoyed Baez for years. And after the first down season, I have jumped completely off that train, which I said I do the whole time. Every year I previewed it, I'm like, I'm going to ride it out till the wheels fall off and I'm gone. And I'm gone. So that's sticking to my guns on that one. Let's talk about the flip side of this situation. And there's the first one I want to hit, because I think it was you that tweeted out a rolling graph. Oh, no, you're not a rolling graph guy.
Are you talking about Yandy Diaz?
Yes. Okay. So it was you that tweeted it out. Okay. Yep. So Yandy Diaz, this is, you know, everyone's, you know, oh, I got him right. He's finally hitting home runs. He's elevating the ball, hitting 322 with 12 homers. Yeah. I'm not going to say anymore, because I want you to have the floor here. Your rolling graph chart of this one stood out like more than a sore thumb in this scenario. Cause basically the one thing GIFs don't work very often on Twitter anymore, which really pisses me off, cause that's kind of my game. I basically would have said, we're back. Just looking at the rolling chart. So what do you got on Yandy Diaz? Because this is not good.
It's the classic, and I wrote up Yandy Diaz early May, and this was happening back in May, where Yandy Diaz, like the first 2 weeks of the season, hit all these fly balls, hit all these home runs. Everyone is paying attention to every little thing over the first 2 weeks of the season, and everyone's going crazy for Yandy Diaz. This is a launch angle revolution. He's going to hit 30 home runs, yada, yada, yada. The fly ball rate from Yandy Diaz in April it was only 37%, which is pretty low. Yandy Diaz is a career 29% fly ball rate guy. So just pounds the ball on the ground. 37% in April, 32% in May. In June, Bubba, 17% fly ball rate. 58% ground ball rate. This is, he's right back to being the same guy. And this is just an example of like not overreacting to April, but even any month. It's just April gets glorified so much because we're all watching it. And we think, this is going to hold all season. And Yandy Diaz will be the example I use in future seasons of like not overreacting to what we see in April. That all said, Yandy Diaz is a fantastic hitter.
Yes.
Like his plate skills are elite. His batting average will be, the projection for Yandy Diaz is 288. I mean, that's really damn good. Yeah. He's hitting 322 right now with 12 homers. The projection's 288 and 8 homers, which I agree with. I think that's where Yandy Diaz is going to end up. A fine player. I just don't think fantasy wise, the walks hurt him, especially because he doesn't run, and the home runs are just not going to be there because he does not hit the ball in the air. So that's my diatribe. If you just look up my Twitter account, search Yandy Diaz, that graph will show. It's pretty stark what has happened with Diaz.
It's a quick drop is what it's like, a roller coaster ride, and you're at the end. That's what it felt like on that one. Lane Thomas, this is a fun name that's out there for many. Dude's having a great year, hitting 298 with 14 home runs. He mashes lefties, destroys left-handed pitching. Obviously, that's not baked in. Destroys lefties. He's hitting righties just fine right now. Leading off for the Nats, another team similar to the Tigers. Pesky is the way I phrase them. They just don't strike out. They BABIP you to death. That's what they do. But Lane Thomas, the rest of the season projections, having for 249 and 11. So where are you at on Lane? Because he's a very, very popular name right now, or people are trying to acquire him if they can. They're trying to say he was the best discount on draft day right now, and we are in June 29th, by the way. So how are you looking at Lane Thomas?
I'm a little torn. I don't think the 14 home run power is there. However, Lane Thomas leading off every day on a Nationals lineup that quietly isn't that bad. We talk about like really bad teams, and I always kind of loop the Nationals in there, but like
it's because their pitching stinks, so they can't win games. That's what it comes down to.
Hey, Patrick Corbin may be back, Bubba. Increased velocity. that was really bad. I watched that one against the Mariners. So I would take the over on Lane Thomas's rest of season projection, which is 249 and 11 home runs, just because I think there has been a rise in hard contact without really sacrificing his strikeout rate. He's not a 300 hitter, which is what he's hitting right now. I think if he settled around like 270, something like that would be fine. 10-11 homer seems fine. And Lane Thomas, I remember this from last season, more than any other base runner last year, had more stolen base attempts in the second half than the first.
I think you are correct. That was definitely a bloom board situation there. I think we talked about that last year.
So you're also getting like Lane Thomas has 7 steals already, had 8 all of last season. I do think you are getting that kind of bump in stolen bases where you're getting like a mid-teens guy in steals, which again, leading off, that's pretty good. So I'm kind of aboard the Lane train, to sum it up.
I think that's a good call. I'm with you. I've been enjoying him so far this season. It's just interesting to see the hype. People are finally waking up to how good Lane Thomas and the Nats, like you said, Heimer Candelaria, we've talked about on the show, and some other Nats that are even CJ Abrams starting to kind of wake up a little bit. We'll see how that continues to pan out. We got a question in the chat here from one Roger Bloomfield. It says, barring injury, why do you think the projections are down on Corbin Carroll? And I bring that up because he's on the board here. He's hitting 292 on the season with 17 homers and 24 steals. The rest of the season's got him hitting 269 with 11 and 15. Still not a bad setup. Is obviously down from his first half of the season approach. So, Ryan, I believe there's one Mr. Bloomfield that's related to you, might be your father, wants to know why the projection is down.
Who is one of the 11 in for golf? So maybe we'll pair him up with you and you can experience.
Hey, I had my very first year at FPAS, right? I didn't know a lot of people.
That's right. You met him. Yeah, that's right.
I practiced every morning with your father. It was a great time.
That's right. I met my brother too. We took you to the airport.
Yep.
It's maybe how this thing was born.
It was. It might have been. Yeah, it might have been his. We won't tell him, but it might have been his idea. No, I'm just kidding.
To go back to the question of Carroll, like, I think the projections have this all wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I don't know. And on to defend the projections, it is very hard. I mean, these are all algorithms, and, like, you're trying to, like, transfer minor league data into a major league projection, and the minor leagues are all screwed up right now. Like, there's totally different hitting environments for everything. There's different rules. There's automated balls and strikes. There's challenge systems. There's pre-tack balls. Like, we just, it's so hard to try and look at a stat line in the minors, and which is what projections are doing, and try and put a number on that in the majors. And, like, when I look at Corbin Carroll, who's projected to hit 260, like, I'm taking the absolute over on that. I think Corbin Carroll's near 290 hitter that he is right now. I mean, the strikeout rate's under 20%, which is fantastic. He doesn't chase. He doesn't even whiff. I think he's an elite batting average guy. The power is fantastic. The stolen bases, I think the projections are way off. He's running wild. I know we don't have the stolen base projection for Corbin Carroll right here, but it's like 14, 15.
15,
yeah. And so he's got 24. So, like, I don't know. I think the projections are way off in Carroll, and that's not a slight to the projections. It is hard. I take, and we've talked about this before. I know we talked about it with, like, Nolan Gorman and Torque, is rookies, second year players. I'm much less, and I know you very much are, I'm less likely to trust a projection for guys who just don't have the major league track record, because there's just so much noise in these minor league numbers.
Yeah, I think Carroll, I think it's definitely passed the eye test. So barring injury, I think we can trust that one. Like, he's a guy that I'm bummed I don't have on more teams. Let's put it that way.
So. Bummed to see Eddie Rosario on this list, man.
Yes, Eddie the Eagle. He was one of the two guys I had highlighted here to discuss. So I'll let you have the floor. Why are you bummed that Eddie's on this list?
Say he's awesome. And in honor of maybe one of former co-host Toby's, one of his favorite players. He's been fantastic this season. I get why the projection is 249 the rest of the way, batting average, where Rosario's hitting 270 and 9 home runs versus his current 13. I don't think the projections take into the account that his eyes are now fixed, which always helps. Maybe they do. I don't, you know, I shouldn't say that. There could be some manual tweaking to some of these things. I just think Eddie Rosario has the track record to keep this up in weeks where obviously the Braves get a lot of right-handed pitching. That's the one caveat fantasy-wise, is you really can't start Eddie Eagle when the Braves have like two or more lefties for that week. But right-handed weeks, lock and load, I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, that's the caveat, I think, with them getting healthy, with Michael Harris starting to play very, very well. I don't know, maybe the projections are taking playing time into account there, and that's kind of deducing or deducting from the overall numbers. That'd be my only guess, because otherwise he's got his production in the first half has no reason to take it away from the second half. Also, like you said, if you look at his last 2 years, if most projection systems use kind of an accumulation of stats, they were bad because he couldn't see. So that, like you said, that could be something to it as well. So maybe, but I'm with you. I think I'd go high there. The one other one I want to mention, though, is Leody Taveras, just because similar like Lane Thomas and these guys, he's getting a ton of pub right now. And Leody was hitting 297 with 8 homers coming into Thursday. Well, he had another home run on Thursday, so he's got 9 homers now, which is funny because the projections had him rest of the season hitting 251 with 8 homers. After he homered today, they dropped him to 7 homers, so they still believe he has the same total in the end, which is very entertaining to me when I saw that. But what I want to say with Taveras, which is fun because it kind of goes to the Carroll conversation, he has 8 steals on the year, and the projections have him for 15 in the second half. So they have him running a ton, but hitting for a lower batting average, which is very, very interesting to me. So what's your thoughts on Leody Taveras, who was a dude last year we thought this was what we were going to get? We didn't get it. We're getting it this year now. But he does hit like 9th every game, so he's not a top of the order bat either.
Yeah. It's the batting average, which is the main like point of contention here. It's a 50-point drop in batting average for Leody Taveras from 297 down to 251 for the rest of the season. So you look at batting average, like, it's interesting because skills can regress. And this is one of my, like, I don't know, I've said this a few times, but like, just because someone has a great barrel rate for 2 months doesn't mean that's going to come back down. Like, hitters can legitimately be hot, legitimately be cold from a surface stats and a skill standpoint for some period of time. This stuff fluctuates. And so when I look at Leody Taveras has a career best strikeout rate of like 20%. Before that, it's 26% last season, 32% in 2021. Like Taveras has been a pretty big strikeout guy. So I more lean the batting average the rest of the way for Taveras to be down near like 260, something like that. I more lean on the projection side. However, the power speed looks really good. So this is not a slight on Leody Taveras. He's playing over his head right now, but he's still, I think pretty damn valuable on a lineup that, like, yes, hitting low in the lineup, but like Texas, man, they just churn that lineup over with ease. So I'm aboard Leody.
That was the other part I mentioned. He's playing for Texas, so you could take it out with a grain of salt and just let kind of enjoy the stats there. And I've seen some smart people more on my DFS side, because you used to never want to play guys at the bottom of the order because turnovers and production and points and everything. Some very smart people that I trust that do analysis on DFS, have their own projection systems and everything. They're showing this year, and maybe Zimmerman will dig into it after the year like he usually does, that like the 8-9 hitters with the steals increases are becoming just as valuable now compared to like some other top of the order bats, because they can get on, they steal bags, they score more runs because of that. So that has upped their production, a la Leody Taveras. So something to keep in mind as well. Who else would you like to discuss on this list? Because there's a handful of fun ones. Ryan Venancio had a funny comment on Shohei Ohtani, like, oh, he's hitting 320 overs. Oh, wait, he's projected for 279 and 21. Shucks. Like, oh, no. But what are some other guys? Because there's a lot of good names here that I'm kind of torn on for sure.
No, it's just wild that Shohei Ohtani, I'm glad Venancio picked up on that. Shohei Ohtani is expected by OPS, is expected to fall harder than all but two major league hitters. Yet the definition of falling hard is Shohei Ohtani hitting 280 with 21 home runs, which would put him at 49 homers and like a 290 batting average. It's just unreal how good he is. Luis Arraez is interesting to me. Like,
that's a heck of a drop off in average.
It is. It's still hitting 318, which is still really damn good. But that's a 70-point drop in batting average. I thought Brandon Marsh was interesting. Another batting average faller, 280 down to 240. So the projections there, don't like that. But I don't know. Those are kind of the big ones. What do you think about Lamont Wade, who shows up here from the Giants angle? It's, again, projected 9 homers on each side of the half, so 18 homers, but a 40-point drop in batting average.
Yeah, I was looking at this one because I agree that I feel he's overachieved this year. But what he does so well that makes me not really care so much is his walkability. Like, he's walking almost 17%. Projections still have him walking over 12%. He's an OBP guy. That's just who he is. He's never been – he hit 207 last year, 253 the year before. He's never this batting average guy. That's not who he is. He is making it a point – before I completely speak out of school, check the numbers, but – he has made it a point to try to hit the ball on the ground more, so he's getting on base. It's kind of one of his things. That's why he's leading off so much. Yeah, he went from 31.7% last year to 42% ground ball rate this year. Fly ball dropped 12%. So the fact he has 9 home runs is impressive. But the reason that batting average is where it's at is because of those balls on the ground. His BABIP is up to 337 from 233. So the sustainability of that is what the projections are kind of second-guessing. I don't know if it drops that much if he continues to hit the ball on the ground the way he is, because there's no shift. So he's taking full advantage of it, getting on base. It's going to drop. I'm not saying he's hitting 280, but to what level? That's the question. He is overachieving, though. I will agree with that. But, we'll see. We'll see. That was an interesting one to see.
I wish he would run, because especially at the top with the OBP at top of the lineup.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
But he's slow. I didn't realize he's pretty damn slow.
Yeah. So he ain't going nowhere. He's strictly there to get on base and let Thyro Estrada hit home runs or someone else do something. Like Jock Jams. They put Jock Jams leading off last year. Jock hit second or third a lot. Like, the funny thing is the Giants do have some guys that can run. They're more towards the bottom of the order outside of Thyro Estrada. Like they're meant to get on base and run late for the guys up top to drive them in. That's how that lineup's built. It's an interesting lineup. I put Luis Matos at the top personally, get him on and let him run with his OBP skills. But that's
He's been playing a lot
every day. Every day. It's been great to see. But sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say I did this. I kind of teased this out on the pitcher side too, which could be a whole other episode in itself.
I think it should be.
I think it should be. Yeah. It's easy to come up with, or it's hard to come up with ideas in the middle of the summer.
That are relevant. Every single week.
The number one projected ERA improver, none other than show favorite Lance Lynn, who gave up three home runs in the first two innings today. However, got seven Ks.
That's what he does, man. It's so annoying. We've talked about it on the show. I hate bringing it up, but literally, I verbatim every time he's on a DFS slate. It's like, okay, here's what you get from Lance Lynn. Five or six innings, you have about 3 to 5 runs because a couple home runs, he's going to strike out 6+. Like, that's what he's going to do every time. And the strikeouts are what keeps sucking us in. That's the problem. So do you believe he's going to drop that much? Because I it's getting hard to believe it now.
I do. I'm not falling off this train, man.
I haven't dropped him yet, so I'm holding out hope.
He's benched in my
– He's benched. Yeah, I'm not starting him either. He's benched,
No, I can't leave him yet. It's interesting. So Lance Lynn was number one in terms of ERA improvement from a 6.40 ERA. That was before today's start. So it actually went up down to 4.25 the rest of the season. And the pitcher who's expected ERA is supposed to get the worst from first to second half is Bryce Elder, who is projected to have a worse ERA than Lance Lynn the rest of the year, despite a 2.44 current ERA. So I pose to you, Bubba, rest of season, Lance Lynn or Bryce Elder? Because you know Lance Lynn's getting more Ks.
Yeah, I'll take Lance Lynn. And I'm starting Bryce Elder right now, but I'm very aware every time I look at his numbers, like every ERA estimator is basically saying this should not be the case. And he pitches to a ton of contact. I hate pitchers like that. So I'm riding the wave right now, but I'm very, very, like, very scared of what the bright side is he never has to face the Braves. It's got that for him.
That's actually it's kind of a joke, but that's kind of true, too.
And the other reason I'll take Lynn, just to say it, I don't think Elder pitches all season.
That's a good point. The corollary of that was, do you want Lance Lynn pitching all season?
Valid.
Want to take some zeros, but valid. No, it was just interesting to me that two guys whose ERA are four runs apart, the guy with the 6.40 ERA is projected to have a better rest of the season than the 2.44 guy.
So, the elder one's fun because he's pitched phenomenal. There's no hiding that at all. But it's like similar to like Andrew Abbott, who's pitched pretty well of late. He still scares the snot out of me in Great American Small Park. Truist Park is not a pitcher's park either, especially as it keeps heating up during the summer. So Elder, it just feels like it's coming. It's coming sooner than later. And he just avoided it his last start. He had a couple scary moments there. So it's coming. All right, let's talk about some of those listener questions, comments. I think we hit on most of the players, but want to give them their due because we appreciate them throwing out the goodies here. Roger Dornknight, by the way, I just love that because Roger Dorn is one of the best characters in Major League that doesn't get the pub, the pub that the other characters get. Like Roger Dorn.
Highly underrated Dorn. Yeah,
the whole like what's this Ole BS? And then when the, you know, Skip just pees on his contract, says, hey, because it's just the best. Roger Dornknight says, let's talk about the big Hunter Renfro second half that's on deck. Well, to be fair, Mr. Dorn, Hunter Renfro's actually started heating up here of late. And I will say, take all of the stats from the Angels with a grain of salt because they just scored 28 runs in Coors Field. But as a whole, Renfro is heating up. So what's your thoughts on his second half?
I think I always question the batting average, but I think the power is absolutely there. HQ were projecting 16 home runs for Hunter Renfro the rest of the way, which would put him at 30 homers with 252. I would take that over teammate Taylor Ward. Yep. Hunter Renfro is also playing some first base. Like, he's playing. Yeah,
they're
all
trying
time.
To do that because they got rid of Jared Walsh again. So they're trying to get Renfro at first base, which would be tremendous for fantasy, by the way.
You know, they signed or traded for Mike Moustakas.
And Eduardo
do not think is a threat. So,
yeah, wouldn't be too worried about that one. But just Renfro at a glance here since June 1st, not counting the home run he hit on Thursday, he's hitting 270 with a 216 ISO. Striking out less than 21% of the time, so he's starting to get it going. I feel pretty good about Mr. Renfro in his second half. So good pull there by Mr. Dorn himself. Matt Modica mentioned Rowdy, Ward, and Adames. Let's go. Yeah, we agree on two out of the three.
Not Mr. Ward, but that's okay. Smart people like Ward, so I could
Ward will have his moments. It's just, can you trust it? Our buddy Ben Ted says, why are Rowdy and Willie doing this to me when I show them so much love? Hey, the support group meets after the show, Ben, if you want to join us. Like, there's a bunch of us on that train, so don't you worry.
And speaking of Ben, you did not use your phone a friend, Bubba. But Ben feels bad for you with my recent run. He offered to help with your picks this week.
I had a bad, I had a hectic day. I have a game plan for this. Ben will be getting a phone at some point on this show for a pick. It will happen. So. It might be a live pick. I might bring him on for, you know, a 30-second spot to make a pick. We'll see, but it's a little tough right now. Scott S. mentions, I believe Scott will be golfing with us in Arizona this year. He says, I think my entire main event team is on the faders list. Well, that's probably why you're playing so well so far.
Yeah, and again, like, maybe a lot of guys we kind of disagree with their projections. So in all seriousness, I mean, maybe that's a good thing.
Could be a very good thing. Gold Eyes Brown Fryer asks, Baez. Yeah, we're all on the same page there. Like, that's one we don't agree with.
Yeah. Yep.
Homer Zygus says, Telez's toast. Brewers will have a new full-time for space by August 1st. Don't bring that hate into my podcast. I'm kidding. I don't agree. But there is a threat of a platoon, yes.
Where are they in the NL Central?
Everybody's tight.
Yeah. So they are. I mean, that's a very winnable division.
Yeah. The Pirates tied with the Reds for first. Yeah. Like, it's wild. Ryan Venancio, this was his comment verbatim. Otani only going to hit 290 with 49 home runs. Crap. Yeah. We agree, Ryan. We agree. Pretty, pretty good. Gerald Points says, which of these guys would you trade for one starting pitcher and one power bat and stay in contention? In a 15-teamer, he can keep for 24 and 25. It's a keeper league, Ryan. Keep for 2 years. He needs a pitcher and he can trade these guys for a pitcher and a power bat. Isak Paredes, Ezekiel Duran, Matt McClain, Matos, Vargas, and Kouser. I would trade Paredes first on that list.
I'd probably trade Paredes and, I mean, if you can get something for Kouser, I mean, if you're going for it this year, do that. If not, Ezekiel Duran.
Yeah.
Like, one guy who I would not trade right now is
Matt McClain.
Yeah. Miguel Vargas I would not trade in a keeper league. I'd love him. You would just get nowhere near the value there.
Yep, agreed. Charlie asks, I don't know about Leody. He was a top prospect with the post-type sleeper kind of thing. He's got Simeon and Seager hitting behind him as the nine guy. Yeah, we're on the same page with you there. Like, we,
I think it was not knowing about the projection for Leody, but I think I agree.
Little Book of Calm has a fun one for us. Bear with us. Rowdy's swing decisions are bizarre among qualified bats. He swings the sixth least. I didn't even read this before when I mentioned it. Okay, he's on the same page. In the MLB, it has declined four straight years. It's not that he's swinging out of the zone more either. It's his zone swing. I agree. He has a chart for that. From a Fab Speculations roster construction perspective, what are some of your tips and tricks as we approach the All-Star break? Do you stash backup closers, injured guys, potential call-ups, etc.?
The move that I always do, and actually this is pretty actionable, and as I look it up, I wonder if the article's out. MLB Trade Rumors every year does a really good piece. They usually run it in June and update it in July right before the deadline. Top 50 guys most likely to be dealt. So what I do, really, and I think I put this in an article basically for HQ, is I go through that MLB Trade Rumors top 50 list and look at the backups. who would fill in if this trade happened. Usually the guys getting traded themselves, whatever. They're just on a different team. They're already on a fantasy team. Doesn't really matter where they go. Unless you're ALNL only, then it might matter if you switch leagues. But just go through that MLB trade rumor list and go through the backups. And if there's a backup you like, someone you think would fill in once that starter is traded, this is now kind of the time to start picking those guys up if you have room to stash. So that's what I have done and written about the last couple seasons is just go for those backups, go for those fill-ins. Sometimes you get burned. I remember the I forget who it was. There were like two closers on the Nationals that both got traded the same week, and like the third guy, Kyle Finnegan. That was a Rob DiPietro special, who I think picked up the third string closer, which is like 4D chess. But typically you're okay just looking at the backup and going for that guy.
Yep, 100%. It's a great call. We talked a little bit about it last week. I'm starting to stash O'Neal Cruz. Those are the kind of guys we can like E-Rod I picked up for a buck this week. I know he's still a little ways away, but if I have room to stash, I'll start.
Trevor Rogers, Luis Urias.
I dropped Trevor Rogers for E-Rod, so we made a dollar transaction there, that kind of situation, and we'll see where it goes. We have one last question from Mr. Roger Bloomfield in the chat. Tristan Casas, he's hitting 351 over the last 2 weeks. If you want to go deeper, he's hitting 288 in June with 9 extra base hits, 3 homers, walking 13%. We've kind of discussed him off and on in our matchups and everything, but I'm a 15% barrel, 52% hard hit in the month. I think we're starting to see the Casas we all wanted to see.
Yeah, I mean, not only have we kind of discussed him in matchups, I would like to claim that I picked Tristan Casas in mid-June as a streamer, and he's pretty much been nails since then. So I will take full credit for this.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm with you. Casas is a beast. Pick him up. Torkelson is no Casas, but Torkelson's a good secondary option if you so choose. But Casas is the dude you want. He's going to have a big second half in Boston, because they were even threatening to play Justin Turner at first base to platoon with Casas, and then Casas started hitting the baseball. It's amazing what a little motivation to do for a kid. It changes everything real quick.
And through it all, and I remember talking about him, like, through it all, even the bad times, he walks so much that the OBP is fine. So, playing time, it's going to be there. So, watch out 23 years old, man.
Watch out for Boston. Their lineup's starting to click right now. It's an interest. If they could ever get some pitching there, that's their biggest downfall. They signed Nelson Lamech. They need pitching depth. That says everything you need to know about Boston. They need
4 more buying Bayos.
Yep. Yes, my boy.
That's your boy.
He is so good. He had a no-no going into the seventh today.
I think it was Eric Cross today who tweeted, I forget the exact DRA, but Bayo's last 11 starts, it's something in the low twos, which is
it's been amazing. Wild. It's been great. Been really good. So we'll hopefully keep that train going. He's no Yuri Perez, but he's been pretty darn good. Any final thoughts as we wrap up another episode and we finish June? It'll be July next time we meet.
Yeah, happy 4th to you, man. And to everyone out there, take some time off. Enjoy. Don't blow yourself up. That whole deal.
No Jason Pierre-Pauls, please.
No Pierre-Pauls. Jeez. I will be out of here. I'll be on vacation. So probably no show next week, but we'll come back. Maybe we'll make it up with a couple episodes when I get back that following week. But yeah, man, hope you have a good 4th. Hope everyone else out there does. And halfway home, so halfway to go.
Yep, it's crazy we're halfway, but it's still a long ways to go. So
are you burnt out with your 10 podcasts yet, Bubba? Or are you still?
I'm burnt out every day until I wake up the next day, and the weekend refreshes me to do it all over again. So yeah, trust me,
internet connectivity.
It was a blessing. Aside. It was a blessing. Like I was in bed early. I read a book that night. It was awesome. I was so happy. But it is. It's a grind, but I say I only do it because it actually helps me with my season long teams. It helps me a lot. So it's kind of the yin and the yang of the situation of it all. And we'll be back with you guys in 2 weeks for another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. If you have questions up till then, let us know, especially if you want about FPAS, about golfing FPAS, anything along those lines. But until next time, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am on Twitter at BDintric, and this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 63. Catch you all next time.
from the Sports Gambling Podcast on Blue Wire. And if you're listening to this right now, there's a good chance you've already been eliminated from your NFL Survivor Pool. Well, don't worry. We're here to help with our free Second Chance Survivor Pool. That's right. We're giving away $3,000 for free in our NFL Second Chance Survivor Pool. It starts this weekend. It's completely free. Just go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/survivor. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/survivor.